From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, July 12th through Friday, July 16th, 2021. It was a week of heavy partisan political combat, centering on the economic issues of the multi-trillion dollar spending bill, the infrastructure, and legitimate fears of uncontrollable inflation. COVID-19 and its Delta variant have yet to fully retreat. Extremely unflattering books about Donald Trump hit the bookstores, Amazon, and bestseller lists. The southern border remains a hotspot. The heat wave and drought continue to inflict damage and misery, and the question continues to be argued, was the election of 2020 a fraud, or are claims that it was stolen from Donald Trump indeed the big lie? Depends on who's doing the talking. Speaking of talking, stand by as we're about to be joined by media thought leaders left, right, and center for a bold hour of Black Belt Talk Radio, in which your tolerance for hearing different but legitimate points of view will be tested. So try not to get angry. Keep your cool. Listen to what's about to be said with an appropriate degree of educated skepticism. During the next hour, we'll be joined by Dom Giordano in Philadelphia talking about COVID-19 issues still standing in the way of a smooth opening of schools in September. Michael Zwirling in Santa Cruz discussing politics, race relations, and the First Amendment. Dr. Dahlia Wax in Las Vegas filling us in on long COVID, plus what it's like having your home invaded by desert critters such as scorpions trying to get out of the heat. Victoria Jones in the nation's capital speculating on the billionaire space race and its impact on astronomical exploration. She says, sign me up and strap me to a rocket, plus a whole lot more. Opinionated people from across the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations as well as the feelings of their target constituents with whom they do their daily dance of affirmation. In a deafeningly noisy world in which we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, heard coast to coast and around the world on great radio stations in the U.S. and the U.K. An examination of the past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media. Information's gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Okay, here we go. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10 this week, the billionaire space race. Virgin Galactic mogul Richard Branson captured the attention of the space exploration world by launching into a brief but historic spaceflight as the first private citizen to do so in a self-funded commercial venture.
Up next, Amazon's Jeff Bezos, and Elon Musk will probably not be far behind.
At number 9 this week, events taking place in Haiti, Cuba, and Afghanistan. The assassination of Haiti's president grabbed headlines, sparking buzz and speculation, and unprecedented protests against communism on the streets of Havana have displayed unrest in Cuba as two Caribbean island nations made their way into the national conversation this past week.
Of course, the American withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan continues to fuel speculation and concern over the threat of a Taliban resurgence in that war-torn nation, marking a shift in U.S. Middle East foreign policy.
At number 8, U.S. relations with China and Russia. Conversation on political talk shows has focused on careful observation of developments in U.S.-Russia relations in the aftermath of the recent Biden-Putin summit discussions, with concern remaining focused on Moscow's apparent meddling in American elections and news dissemination.
And don't expect U.S. relations with Beijing to improve anytime soon, as it becomes apparent that in spite of the problems we face with our increasingly powerful adversary on the world stage, so many American companies remain tied to China in their business interests and operations.
At number 7, the heat wave and climate change. The heat wave and drought plaguing the western regions of the United States and Canada are leaving devastation and misery in their wake.
And global climate anomalies have led to record-breaking rainfall and tragic floods in Germany and its western European neighbors.
At number 6, the southern border crisis and immigration reform. Although it continues to be largely ignored by the mainstream media, the humanitarian crisis on the southern border is a growing problem, and immigration reform remains a very hot topic, especially on News Talk Radio.
Some 70 radio talk show hosts are planning to descend on Washington, D.C. at the end of September for a post-pandemic revival of the annual Hold Their Feet to the Fire rally sponsored by the Federation for American Immigration Reform. The Michael Harrison Wrap will be in attendance covering the event.
At number five, a three-way tie between inflation, infrastructure, and the spending bill. Rapidly rising cost of automobiles, fuel, food, construction materials, and housing has economists worried about the potential of runaway inflation eroding the value of the dollar and damaging people's savings.
Meantime, President Biden's focus on the nation's infrastructure and a multi-trillion dollar spending bill remain the focus of fierce partisan debate in Congress.
At number four, voter legislation tied with ongoing claims of 2020 election fraud. The Arizona audit grinds on, and the idea of it continues to spread as red state legislatures enact laws further regulating the process of voting in the U.S. based on the GOP-backed premise promoted by former President Trump that the 2020 election was stolen.
A concept dubbed the Big Lie by the Democrats and a large growing segment of the nation's media observers and political commentators.
At number three, a three-way tie between the January 6 investigation, CPAC, and critical race theory. Race relations in America remains a hot topic, and the debate over whether critical race theory should be taught in the nation's public schools is the current hot point of contention.
The other focal point of contention that's tearing this country apart centers on the ongoing investigation of the events of January 6.
At number two this week, Trump books. Several high-profile books have been published, with more about to drop, detailing the final days of the Trump administration, portraying the former president in a less than flattering light.
Less than flattering is an understatement. Political gadfly Michael Wolff's landslide, The Final Days of the Trump Presidency, and I Alone Can Fix It, Donald J. Trump's Catastrophic Final Year, from Washington Post journalists Carol Leinig and Philip Rucker, portray the former president as a desperate, out-of-control, authoritarian wannabe and a danger to American democracy.
And at number one this week, COVID-19, including the Delta variant, vaccines, and a medical condition described as long COVID. Although we seem to be making progress, cases of the coronavirus are showing an uptick again, spearheaded by the spread of what is being called the Delta variant, prevalent in parts of the country that have lower rates of vaccination.
The Delta variant seems to be contagious among children and the younger population, creating angst among parents and the education establishment as the opening of schools in September looms on the horizon. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Let's jump into the interview segment of the program by visiting with the Dean of Philadelphia talk show hosts, Dom Giordano, who's heard noon to 3 p.m. daily on News Talk Giant WPHT. So, Dom, there's a lot happening, and certainly COVID tops the list. From the education standpoint, since you are the leading advocate for education on talk radio in America today, what are your thoughts, what are your observations in terms of the conversation between parents, teachers, school boards, school unions, about kids going back to school in September, not just in your area, but across the country? What's the general tone?
Well, the tone is, Michael, that it's heating up already. I thought it would take a lot longer, but with some of this CDC guidance, we're seeing a rear guard action of some of these school boards and parents who want all kids to have masks when they go back into school. I'm starting to see Randy Weingarten and the others take baby steps toward that. In my area, though, five school districts already went on record saying it would be a choice, an option. And it wasn't just the science of it. They emphasized it as that's where we are now. And I think that's always the most solid position to take. Everybody believes in choice, at least on paper. And that's what I'm driving should be the policy going forward. Unless you're in an area where there's a high concentration of the virus at this point. But what we're seeing is Fauci starting to become prominent again on this. A guy that I bring on from Johns Hopkins, Dr. Marty McCarry, who's really become a national figure, adamant at how tiny the percentage is of kids, particularly under 12, that have gotten the virus and the effects on that. It's minuscule. And his argument is, Are we really going to go back to masking en masse because of that? And this will play right out into the ongoing politics of the day. What I'm thrilled about is the fact that these school board meetings and the engagement of parents, we've never seen anything like this. This issue will start to ratchet up. And I'm suspect of any school board that is not addressing it now, that's trying to kick the can down the road. They ought to go on the record that it would be an issue of choice unless public health officials say a barrier has been reached here with the virus again, which I don't think is going to happen in many areas across the country. But I'm so glad you're talking about that this week, because it's just bubbling up this week as we speak. I mean, within the last 24 or 48 hours, it started to rise up again.
What advice would you give? I know that you have children, but they're grown.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to parents of children, say between the age of 5 and 12 or 10, young children, or if you had a kid yourself of that age, in terms of dealing with this situation now and thinking about September?
Well, the first thing is hopefully you have a trusted pediatrician that you have value in. I would first talk with them. And then, husband and wife, whatever the relationship is, should talk it over together and have a united front. But as far as I can see, Michael, unless you're into one of these areas, and there are several with the variant, your choice should be to have your child go back to school without a mask, unless there's an underlying comorbidity, something serious. And that's, again, where you would talk with your pediatrician. What qualifies under this? But the CDC is not saying kids under 12 that can't be vaccinated should have to wear a mask. And the repercussions of the mask procedure, again, are tremendously damaging. So I think it's a fairly tough call. But I think I would recommend, and what I would do, is not the mask.
You're in the middle of all of the hot topics. You're in one of the biggest cities in America, on one of the biggest talk stations, and you're on right in the middle of the day. So you've got a bird's eye view. What's the buzz out there this week on all of the new books about Trump? And what type of an impact do you think that's having on him? And the big question that still is out there, was the election stolen? More and more people call it the big lie, and then it seems more and more people are buying into it. How do you deal with that?
I deal with that in that my stance has been, and I try to keep it going forward, that I can only go with what I know, that a lot of these entities on the Democrat side in states like Pennsylvania, where I am, did not perceptually do the right things to ensure that wild conspiracies wouldn't flourish. That being said, I don't engage in any of these wild conspiracies. And I think if Trump is viewed as the candidate of grievance, just looking backward, he's going to have a little bit more trouble getting the nomination if he runs. DeSantis, to me, uses the same tactics on the media that a lot of people like, yet he's looking forward. He's talking about his record, what he's done, and what Biden hasn't done. Trump is still engaging in fighting the last battle, and that gets crowds animated, but it's not going to win elections. It's not going to win in the suburbs. And I would predict by the time we get to all that, there's not going to be anything new. All it is a perceptual thing that things were not done properly, but we have not found any evidence of widespread fraud at all.
What do you think is going to happen between somebody like DeSantis, who still is a supporter of Trump, and Trump tries to seem like a supporter of DeSantis, although
yes.
I'm not sure where that's going. What do you think is going to happen? And now this is pure speculation. I know you don't have a crystal ball, but we're all thinking about this.
Would tell you this way, Michael, and I wonder if you might agree. I know maybe that's not the hat you're wearing today in this, but I always tell, and I've had some people at various levels ask me off the air based upon read of audience and all that, should you run now? And I think of the example of Governor Christie, who did not run in 2012. When the opportunity is there, you run. If you wait, all kinds of things can happen. So I would tell DeSantis, you run, even if it's Trump. Now, you may not want to bloody Trump in the same way you would another candidate. You'll joust with him a bit, He got to run, though. If he waits and Trump is a nominee, then who knows what happens the next time around. When you're hot, and DeSantis is very, very hot right now, you run. I'm kind of hoping that DeSantis is the candidate. You can tell, again, he brings a lot of the things that Trump says and Trump support without the baggage, though, that we've seen so far. And I think he would have the wind at his back to be the nominee and to be the winner. With Trump versus Biden, could we really go through that again? My God.
That's Dom Giordano, heard daily noon to 3 p.m. on WPHT in Philadelphia. Coming up next, a trip to the West Coast and a provocative conversation about the First Amendment and then some. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. One of the great bands of the golden age of album rock, Gun Hill Road, has been around for more than 50 years. The members of Gun Hill Road are Steve Goldrich, Paul Reich, Glenn Leopold, Brian Coonan, and yours truly, Michael Harrison. I wrote the lyrics to a song on our new album, What Year Is This? It's titled, I Know You're Real. It's about the relationship between human beings and our friends in the animal kingdom.
I know you're real.
Take a moment to write down the following web address to see the music video of this inspirational song that contains some wonderful animal images that'll rock your heart and soothe your soul. Here's the address. Write it down. IKnowYouAreReal.com. That's IKnowYouAreReal.com. If you love animals, you'll feel real good after seeing this video. IKnowYouAreReal.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. Our affiliate on the Central California coast is Heritage News Talk Station KSCO Santa Cruz. The station has a powerful signal that also covers the Silicon Valley, San Jose, and even gets into parts of San Francisco. For the past 30 years, this beacon of independent broadcasting has been owned by one of the most colorful individuals in the radio industry. His name is Michael Zwirling, known to his family, friends, employees, and listeners as MZ. MZ hosts a two-hour show every weekend on KSEO called The Saturday Special, and this past weekend, I was his guest on the program. We covered a variety of topics, including political correctness, the future of media, and the First Amendment. Here's an excerpt from that conversation.
So I started walking up Porter Street, and I came to Soquel Elementary School, and there was a big flashing electronic sign that said, "We believe in Black Lives Matter." And what went through my head, I said, wait a second. I think that's a political statement. Isn't that, wouldn't you call that a political statement, Michael?
Well, it depends on the exact wording. Did it say we believe in Black Lives Matter?
Yes.
Or did it say that we believe that Black Lives Matter? Two very different interpretations. Think about it. What
okay.
did it say?
Oh, geez, I can't. You know what? I took a picture of it. I'll tell you right now.
Yeah,
I will
because
tell
that's
you right
that's
now,
key. Because you said we believe in Black Lives Matter. That means it's political. They believe in the organization, and any organizations are political. Believing that Black Lives Matter is a very
okay.
Different...
All that's hit here. The first. There's a rainbow behind it. There's big block red letters. We believe the first line. The second line, Black Lives Matter. That's what it says.
Well, they played it. They played it close to the vest.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's something that's spoken about quite a bit these days. I mean, it's in the news everywhere. So maybe it's perfectly reasonable and plausible and logical. But it rubbed me the wrong way. I don't think. That a public elementary school that's fortunate enough to have a changeable electronic sign should be using that to make what I believe is a political statement.
Well, it has become a political statement, as have so many things. I mean, if they had said, we believe you should be wearing a mask, Would you have taken that as a political statement? You could have. Whether to wear masks or not has been politicized, and when you think about it objectively, isn't that ludicrous? We have turned many things into political statements in this highly polarized society and time in which we live. To say, I believe in equality, I believe that Black Lives Matter, I believe that people should have equal opportunity under the law, well, that's political, but it's based on the very basic tenets of the United States Constitution and the founding of the nation.
Sort of like we oppose pollution. I mean, that's... I guess that could be considered.
Yeah, yeah.
Who would disagree with that? You know, so
somebody who thinks that if you are so bold as to make the statement you oppose pollution, that you're tied into some type of political organization that's environmental in nature, that affects taxation on businesses, closing of businesses, changing of business processes, things that might hurt the economy, and then it starts. And once money gets into it, it becomes political. And that's what's wrong, is that we do not have the clarity of thinking and the ability to communicate nuances that separate the political agenda from the underlying intent of some of these movements. There's nothing more frustrating than having a political idea, a meme, if you will, hijacked by ruthless and unscrupulous political forces. They hijack the wording, they hijack the name of the movement, and then suddenly you find yourself being against something that in your heart you're really for.
Yeah.
And that's what we're living with right now.
And I enjoyed your program. I always enjoy your program when I get a chance to listen to it. I'm talking about the Michael Harrison Wrap that runs on this station from 6 to 7 p.m. on Fridays, just hours after it's off the press. Mm. And one of the topics you discussed yesterday, as expected, because it was a big news item, was the Trump lawsuit.
Yes.
You know, about freedom of speech. Mm. And you and I have had many conversations in the past. We are totally on the same wavelength. And when I heard that Trump filed that, I'm a Trump supporter. I know you, I don't know whether you are or not, but I know that I'm clearly a Trump supporter. And when I saw that, I said, wait a minute. He knows that these private platforms aren't violating his or anybody else's free speech. And that's exactly what you guys talked about on the Wrap last night.
We talked about it. I spoke with Steve Wiseman, who was our resident cyberspace legal expert. But the fact of the matter is that, of course, Donald Trump knows that his lawsuits are ridiculously unworthy based upon the Constitution. And he knows that, but he's playing the game because a lot of people in this country who are not that astute about the letter of the law and how the Constitution works, in other words, a low information base, he plays to their fears and to their ignorance. And this is not against Trump. This is what he did. I'm telling you what he did.
Absolutely. And when he was president,
right,
he was a lot more honest, I thought, when he said we need to withdraw their protection under Section 230.
That's a legitimate discussion.
Yes, that totally. But violating his freedom of Trump, I really do, but okay. That's BS. It really is.
Well, you could love Trump and also say something he does is BS. That's healthy American discussion.
Yeah.
As opposed to having a cult worship of a leader that is right no matter what because they say it. That's scary. That's Stalin.
I was surprised. He could have come out with this lawsuit and said they should lose their 230.
That's too complicated. That's too complicated. People glaze over when you talk about they should lose their 230. No, they're in violation of my free speech. They're bad. And you played
well,
to that.
Well, no, he wouldn't say it that way. He would say they should lose their insulation against lawsuits. Everybody understands that. You don't have to say 230.
Yeah, perhaps. But let me tell you, this whole idea here, let's turn it around. Okay, here we are. The president of the United States is dumped by one of the major platforms out there that's a private company, just like KSEO, just like Talkers Magazine, just like the San Francisco Chronicle or the Washington Times or the Wall Street Journal. It's a private platform. The president of the United States does not get time on it because they don't want to put him on because they don't like what he says. He says, this is an abridgment of my freedom of speech, and by the power of the government, we're going to force you to do it. And everybody goes, yeah, because if they could censor the president, what could they do to us? Which is, I'm sorry, folks, but that's stupid thinking. Because when the president of the United States is forced upon a private platform, doesn't that sound like Russia? Doesn't that sound like China? What do you mean you're not going to put Xi Jinping on your local newspaper? You're not going to put the president of China in? And the government forces you to do it. That is exactly what people want to happen here by wanting the president to be able to have access to any private medium because it's his God-given right. The First Amendment protects the private company.
No, you and I are totally on the same page. And I wish people knew that.
I'm amazed at
how many people are not, they don't understand that.
No, they don't understand
and
that.
And even after we're explaining it now, and
because
you and
they
I
don't
have
want
had
to
this-
understand it. They don't want to. We live in a time where people seek victory as opposed to truth. And whatever will get us to where we want to be, whether we're liberals, whether we're conservatives, whether we're Giants fans or whether we're Mets fans, we will do whatever it takes to get to where we want to be. We'll cherry pick information. We'll eliminate other information. We'll jump on things that we know are out of context and state them without explaining the story. This is what our society has come to. And I hate to say it, this is what talk radio has come to. And this is what we have
and
to
And it didn't
about.
Have to do come to this. And that certainly wasn't my plan, and I've been a complete failure in that regard.
No, you haven't been.
No, really, I'm not fishing for compliments. It sounds like I am. But I have been a complete...
But we're all complete
failures. I always wanted the radio station to be used as a medium for civil discourse and positive change. Mm. And I've been a complete... The station has been a complete failure.
Why?
And when it stinks from the head.
Why?
Because
why
we haven't done that. I mean, we have a station that a lot of people like, but I believe that the people who like us are the ones who are politically, you know, leaning more towards the right.
Well, there's nothing.
And
about,
I like everybody to like us.
Yeah, but there's nothing about leaning.
We've strived to be a voice for everyone. We really have.
You can't be a voice for everyone because that's not possible. But you can strive to be as honest and as fair as possible. There's nothing wrong with being conservative and leaning conservative. There's nothing wrong with having an editorial position. There's nothing wrong with only being conservative as long as you do so in a way that's intelligent and within accordance to the facts, so that you're not misleading people, amplifying what they think if it's wrong, or worse yet, pandering to them, preaching to the choir, telling people what they want to hear.
Okay. What about the big tech then? Big tech media.
I think big tech is too powerful. Too powerful.
Yeah?
Too powerful. I think that there's a lot of truth to what Trump is saying. I just don't think he's correct about it being a First Amendment issue.
Right. Okay. Exactly. I couldn't agree with
I
you
I think
more.
That we've reached a point where they have become vital to some people doing business. They have become vital to the communications process, which means they're no longer I could take them or leave them type of a situation. As a result, they wield so much power over business and lives that they have to have some type of new regulation that's in sync with the technology and modern times.
Now, who can argue with that?
No, you can't argue with it. It's absolutely correct.
Hmm. Okay. Well, so I'm not going to be bothered by the sign that I walked past the other day.
Well, you shouldn't be bothered by it. You should be happy that you live in a free country where, well, it was a public school, did you say?
Yeah.
Well, you have a right to be bothered.
You're thinking it over now.
No, because if it's a public school, then it is subject to regulation on government activity in the marketplace of ideas. And if taxpayer dollars are being used to perpetuate what has become a political meme, Black Lives Matter is now political. Whether it's right that it is or wrong that it is now political. If you can make a case for that, then you can make a case that the public schools should not be using that on their neon sign. And there's no
That's
place.
That's all that went through my head when I walked
by. Well, that makes total sense. But we're talking about it coming, you know, in an intelligent way to understand what are the elements at play here. What are we considering? The same thing has to do with what's called prayer in schools. You know, the First Amendment not only offers you freedom from government censorship, it also offers you freedom from government involvement in favoring one religion over another. You know, religious freedom, separation of church and state is also in the First Amendment. And when schools show favoritism toward one religion over another and their public schools, a case can be made that they are abridging certain people's First Amendment rights to have freedom of religion separate from government interference. And yet the argument that is made is that they're banning God in school and they're taking away our freedom of worship. No, they're not taking away your freedom of worship. They're taking away the freedom of the school board to be able to use school funds and school curricula to favor one religion over another. But that gets abstract and people don't stop to think about these things. And that's why I believe it is very important for this country to survive another 245 years is that we educate people on civics, social studies, history, the law, business, all of these things that children today are woefully uneducated about, so that they could be good citizens, because you can't run this machine called the United States of America if you don't have an owner's manual, if you don't know what buttons to press to make things happen. If you just start pressing buttons, you'll break it. And it's broken right now.
How do we fix it without getting killed?
We fix it by, first of all, coming to grips with it in our own lives and not engaging in any activity that we realize is fraudulent for the sake of gaining a foothold in politics or business. That's one. Be honest
with yourself. Wait a second. Specifically, this example that I've raised, okay, it is a public school.
Mm-hmm.
And
it shouldn't have Black Lives Matter. We support Black Lives Matter, or we believe Black Lives Matter. It should not be on a public school ground because it has become a political football, and therefore it does not belong in a public school. They should practice integration. They should practice teaching the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, that certain truths are self-evident, that all people are created equal, blah, blah, blah. All that stuff is very good foundational material. But to specify a political organization or a political hot potato is not something that a public school should be doing at this time. That's an excerpt from a conversation I had this past Saturday on our Central California Coast affiliate KSCO Santa Cruz, in which I was interviewed by the station's colorful owner, Michael Zwirling. If you'd like to hear the entire conversation from which it was extracted, you can check out my podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, at mhinterview.com. Coming up next, a physician's explanation of the term long COVID and a wild first round in what's being called the billionaire space race. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
Some mistakes you just can't fix, like your retirement. You only get one chance, and with Grace Advisors, we'll help you make the most out of your one chance at a great retirement. At Grace Advisors, we make sure your retirement income is not at risk with the up and down ride of the stock market roller coaster. Instead, we build a foundation for your retirement, where, when the market's up, you're up. When the market's down, you lose nothing, and we structure your plan in a way that you will save more on taxes, giving you an even greater return on your nest egg. So speak with the Grace Advisor, a Christian company, helping families protect their future every day. Call 888-585-1615. That's 888-585-1615. Call 888-585-1615 and speak to a Grace Advisor today. Or visit graceadvisors.com/radio.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. COVID-19 remains at the top spot on the list of the most talked about topics, according to talkers. This week, there's concern over the continuing spread of the Delta variant, a syndrome called long COVID, and the ongoing phenomenon of vaccine hesitancy. We're joined now by our medical correspondent. She's a nationally respected physician and talk show host heard daily across the nation out of Las Vegas, Nevada on the Genesis Communications Network, Dr. Dahlia Wax. You're in Las Vegas. I imagine it's normally hot there. How has this heat wave affected you folks?
Oh, man, it's been rough because not only do we have the high heat and record-breaking temperatures, we hit 117 over the weekend. Ooh. We're also dealing with the drought. And interestingly, I had scorpions come into my house. We're seeing snakes, scorpions, grasshoppers, as the drought is pushing these animals and insects from the desert to more wet, food-friendly areas within the cities and the suburbs. And so it's interesting how the climate and the landscape is changing with the heat and the drought. And, you know, sadly, we're starting to have to conserve energy. We're having to conserve water. And we're probably going to be getting some more news down the bend in August as our Lake Mead, one of the biggest man-made lakes out there, its water levels have dropped so badly that I don't think we have enough water to sustain the population we have here in southern Nevada. So it's going to be really tricky on, you know, what the next few months and years are going to bring if this drought doesn't end and the heat wave doesn't, you know, subside.
That could be the next major medical issue that brings you to this program, often as you've been on with COVID. Hopefully COVID will be in the rearview mirror eventually. But I do worry about the future of water and the future of, healthy environments, so people don't have to worry about, you know, dropping dead by walking out in the street during the height of the day. It's a terrible situation. COVID. It's still number one on our list. There's always something. You and I, a couple of weeks ago, talked about the Delta variant. It's still out there. I'd like to, in this conversation, cover a bit of that. And also what this thing called long COVID is, and maybe a little bit about why people are hesitant to get the vaccine. Let's start with the Delta variant. It's still out there, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So the Delta variant has now become the most prominent variant. Some states are really grappling with some serious cases. In my neck of the woods, hospitalizations are up. Both vaccinated and unvaccinated individuals, but unvaccinated are making the majority of the cases. Also, we're seeing younger individuals. Mississippi is grappling with some cases in their ICU, a couple of whom are needing ventilators. So this Delta variant has proven that it could evade the vaccines to a small degree. It can affect younger populations, and it could be very easily transmissible.
In terms of younger populations, a lot of parents are concerned about sending their kids to school soon. What are your thoughts about children who are not vaccinated or the real small ones and masks, et cetera? What are your thoughts about children?
Exactly. It's tricky because, you know, in our neck of the woods, we had a lot of student suicide. It made national news. And kids gained weight. They didn't get their regular vaccines. And, you know, kids being kind of locked up at home, it just caused a whole bunch of disastrous effects. And so most medical professionals, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, want kids back in school. But I would suggest that all schools have that light switch where if we get a bad flu or this variant seems to affect kids much more severely than flu usually does, then they could at least do virtual. And many schools aren't built to have the 6 feet social distancing, which is why the CDC suggested 3 feet. But the vaccines might not be available for kids at the earliest until the fall. Pfizer is hoping to finish one of its preliminary studies by September and then ask for emergency authorization that month. So, and that's only, I believe, the kids that are 6 to 12. I don't think we're going to see all kids be able to get vaccines this fall. Moderna hasn't given a timeline yet. So basically, we're just still kind of in limbo. And so we just, you know, recommend that, you know, kids wash their hands, you know, teachers still try to, you know, keep the place clean. The teachers at least get vaccinated. Whoever could get vaccinated. But kids are going to need to be kids. They're going to have to learn. And this year and a half of no school has really been a disservice to them. So we want to get the kids back.
Now, what is this thing being called long COVID?
Right. So long COVID, as Dr. Fauci has alluded to, as post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2 infection, or PASC. PASC has not gone viral. We still call it long COVID. But long COVID is where somebody can get mild or severe COVID and then not get better in 4 or 5 days like a typical cold. They could have chronic symptoms. cough, fatigue, loose teeth, hair loss, depression, fever, brain fog, memory loss, loss of taste, testicular pain. And in fact, there's an article in The Lancet that was just released, a study saying there was over 203 symptoms. One person committed suicide recently from her long COVID symptoms. So these are symptoms that are happening either because the virus is still alive in 4 months after the infection causing inflammation, or just the sequelae of that virus, even though the virus could be dead and gone, is still a process within the body. And so long COVID is something that to me should be a huge incentive for people to get vaccinated, because long COVID could include blood clots. Long COVID could include hallucinations, psychosis, even death. So it's one of those things where not only are we battling acute COVID, we're also battling a chronic symptomatology.
Why do you, as a doctor, and the research that you're privy to and that you study, why are people avoiding the vaccine, this thing called vaccine hesitancy? The last time you were on, you and I sort of touched upon the political aspect of it, but you said it's more than politics, that's a simplistic view of it, that even though there is a certain political divide, that there's more to it. Here it's 2 weeks later. What are your thoughts?
Great. Well, what I did is I created a survey, because I'm licensed in multiple states, including Mississippi and Alabama, who don't have the highest vaccine rates, yet Montana, I'm licensed in Montana, it has the second highest next to Vermont. So when you just look at the numbers of vaccination rates, you have Vermont and Montana, both blue and red, that seem to kind of be really leading the pack in terms of, you know, reaching herd immunity sooner. But many of my patients in Mississippi and Alabama, they're declining the vaccine because they don't have a nearby medical facility. If they have a side effect, they don't think it's safe to go to the vaccine site. There's a lot of law enforcement that have left the force. There's crime. Some people fear that they're going to get COVID if they are outdoors, because for the last year or so, they've been told to stay indoors. So it's interesting some of the responses we're getting in this survey. And some have said they live alone. And so if they do have a side effect, there's nobody that'll help them. So they're like, let's sleeping dogs lie. I'll just still stay home, work from home, do my thing. Because if I do take this and I get a side effect, I have nobody that can help me and take me to the hospital. So it's really interesting. There's a whole breadth of reasons. And so with the survey, we made it such that people could type in their own reason, but there's a whole bunch, whether religious exemption, doctor told me not to. A couple had said they don't believe that the vaccine studies were done representing their race, representing their gender, their medical condition. Some HIV patients, they don't know if enough HIV infected individuals were tested. So it's amazing all the different reasons people are saying, I think I'm going to wait.
That's our medical correspondent, Dr. Dahlia Wax of the Genesis Communications Network. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Turning our attention now upward to the sky and beyond, the billionaire space race. Richard Branson, the mega-rich dude behind Virgin Airlines, beat out fellow mogul Jeff Bezos of Amazon as the first self-financed private citizen to head into space, ushering in a whole new chapter in space exploration. Joining us now is our Washington correspondent, the executive director of the DC radio company, Victoria Jones. Knowing you, Victoria, all these years, I'm quite aware of your interest in space. So I know you're following the adventures of Richard Branson, Jeff Bezos, and Elon Musk. Pretty exciting, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I've been riveted. I could only have been more riveted if I'd attached myself to the outside of the rocket, really, which sounds intriguing. It's fascinating. And there are more billionaires who are intrigued with going. There's a Japanese billionaire entrepreneur who's about 38 years old. But Branson won the race, which he's now sort of saying, you know, it wasn't a race. Well, really, Richard, I think it was a race when you were in it to win it. But Bezos is still being very, very competitive. He, of course, is going up next week. But it is a race, and it's partly a race because these guys are so competitive, which is why they're billionaires, but also because the future of commercial space flight is seen as being very lucrative.
Yes, very lucrative and very doable. And the very idea that private industry can take a lead in the space, in space exploration, I guess that's the term to use it as opposed to space race. Space race kind of harkens back to the Cold War and the 60s and Kennedy and you know, Sputnik. But now they're all on the same side. They have their own companies, but it's not a an international prestige situation. It's a corporate positioning. It's Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler, you know, and getting themselves ready for a new era. But it should be pointed out that private industry has, since the very start, played a role in space exploration. It's just that NASA controlled all the budgets and all the cards, and they would, you know, farm out these contracts to these technology companies that would, and you know, industries that would build the parts, build the rockets, build all that. NASA is not a manufacturing company, so it isn't that much of a departure from where it was. You mentioned something before that's very interesting. You said that it would only be more exciting if you were able to strap yourself to the rocket. Could you see yourself actually getting into something like that and going off, even on a short journey like they did? For the experience, or would you stop short of actually putting your body on one of those candles and having it lit underneath you?
I would love to, but this is going to sound so dissatisfied with where they are. I'd love to. Quite honestly, what they've just done doesn't satisfy me.
Oh.
I don't want 4 minutes of weightlessness less than 100 miles up. I want to go into space. Real space.
Yeah, this is something a lot of people don't realize. They're on the edge of space. That's like going into the ocean up to your knees and saying I swam to Europe. You know, it is the very, very, very low regions of space. The weightlessness is not even, it's not even full weightlessness, and that's a whole complicated subject. What is weightlessness? There is weight in space. This is more like you're falling to Earth. It's very similar, the type of weightlessness they experience in low Earth orbit, to those vomit comets that that drop, and when it's dropping like an elevator, you experience what seems like weightlessness. Well, these low Earth orbit vehicles are falling to Earth, but they're moving so fast they keep falling over the edge of the horizon. So they don't actually fall down to hit the Earth, but it's a falling. Being in orbit is a situation of falling. The amount of speed you have keeps you from hitting the ground. Does that make sense, what I'm saying to you?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, then I guess I'm.
Well, you said it very well.
Oh.
But it's so weird, unless you're a physicist or an astrophysicist. Mm-hmm. It's so weird to us that to take it in is like, okay, my mind is getting blown now. Keep going because I'm going to explode next.
You know, there's more to this space stuff than just a 4 minute joyride. Longer trips into space can be dangerous. Dangerous in terms of hitting a space rock at very fast speed, zero gravity weakening your muscles, and radiation wreaking havoc on your cells. So even though we're optimistic about eventually setting up spaceports on the moon and factories there and colonizing Mars, we've got a number of serious obstacles to overcome before space becomes a tourist attraction. That's Victoria Jones, the executive director of the DC Radio Company, and that concludes this latest installment of our show. This has been the Michael Harrison Wrap, looking back at this past week of Monday, July 12th through Friday, July 16th, 2021. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. And that does it for this week's installment of The Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications in conjunction with Talkers Magazine and Talk Media Network. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.